Blog Talk Radio.
I love my mother so. She's sweet, so sweet. Ooh, mother gave me life. I wouldn't be here without my mother.
Boy, what a sweet mother, right? How you brothers doing tonight, man? Ladies and gentlemen, I think I got Daniel on the phone. I just called Daniel to come and join us on this radio show. You know, he's the one who wrote that song. He'll be calling in a little bit, I hope. Right, Daniel? As I just called to remind you to be on the, come in on the radio show tonight. You'll be in a minute, right? There you go. Put it back on there. All right. Start the show on his way in, guys. So how's everybody doing tonight, ladies and gentlemen? Joseph and Robert, I see you're already here. How you doing, brothers?
Doing wonderful. Hey, man, guess what?
What happened? What, Robert?
I'm over here perpetuating the stereotype. I have the biggest
watermelon and fried chicken.
Not doing fried chicken yet, but I have a deliciously cold and sweet melon before me. I am devouring it as we speak. So sorry about the stereotype, folks.
I'm not worried about the stereotype. I'm trying to figure out how I could get some.
I'm talking about
so far away. Oh, so far away.
Sure.
But is that a stereotype of ours? I mean, how did we end up with that one? Anybody know? Joseph, you're the historian. How did black folks end up with this watermelon stereotype? As much watermelon as there the whole world eats.
And as delicious as it is.
I have a theory.
Okay.
Okay.
My theory is that, of course, well, I was listening to a health show probably a couple of years ago, and when they were talking about the best way to hydrate yourself, the host said the best way to hydrate yourself was to eat your water instead of drinking your water. And, of course, when you have people that was working in the hot sun all day long doing very strenuous work, it was very important for them to stay hydrated.
Well,
so I think the slaves, they automatically or they instinctively, or it was something they brought from their homeland because, of course, you know it's very hot in Africa. And they knew that eating watermelon would keep them hydrated better than, say, drinking a glass of water. And probably the slave masters, of course, they were not concerned about the health and well-being of a slave to an extent. So the slaves probably took it on their own to make sure that they ate a lot of watermelon so they would stay hydrated while working in the hot sun, you know, from dusk to dawn. But like I said, that's my theory. I don't have any data to back that up, but I'm just taking what I know about hydration and what I know about the stereotype, as you said, of black people having a great, you know, big love, liking watermelon. So that's my theory. Like I said, it has not been proven, but that's just my take.
Okay, I mean, you know, I'm sure that sounds substantial, a substantial explanation. What do you think, Robert? You guys are going in and out.
Robert can be the watermelon.
Then you disappear.
He could be the watermelon.
Come on, Robert. Take a break, Blow. Take a break, Blow. Well, I tell you this, I read this to you while you were talking, you know. I mean, I was listening to you talking at the same time. I'll listen to you while you were talking. But anyway, the paper's been written on everything, as you know. The name of this paper by William S. Black, William R. Black, How Watermelons Became Emancipation and the Origins of Racist Trope. Here's just an abstract right quick. Says this article explicates, there's a lot of big words here, guys, to be talking about a watermelon. This article explicates the origins of the racist watermelon trope and its relationship to white Americans' attitudes toward emancipation. The trope had antecedents in Orientalist depictions of the growing selling and eating of watermelons, but the fruit was not associated with African Americans until after emancipation. Freed people used watermelons to enact and celebrate their freedom, especially their newfound property rights. This provoked a backlash among white Americans, who then made the fruit a symbol of African Americans' supposed uncleanliness, childishness, idleness, and unfitness for the public square. The trope spread in the U.S. print culture throughout the late 1860s and supported the post-emancipation argument that African Americans were unsuited for citizenship.
Leon.
Yes.
Leon.
Yes, sir.
How well can you hear me?
Very well.
I can't hear you very well.
Really?
Really?
Why are you just telling me this, man? Can you hear me better now?
I can hear you better now, but still not.
Oh, boy.
The way I would like to hear you.
I hear you very well, though.
Okay.
Maybe that's...
So basically with that order, huh?
Go ahead.
So basically what the article is saying is, I really don't understand what that article is saying, really.
Well, what it was saying was, I put it in a nutshell or a watermelon rhyme for you. They're saying that black folks, freed black folks, started using watermelon to celebrate with. When they became property owners, they take them juggles, eat them, throw them in the air, and have a good time with them, right? So, of course, they're racist. They always found a way to. Sir? Say that again.
So why did they choose the watermelon?
Well, that may be where you come in.
After
that may be where you come in. Your theory.
Exactly right.
Yeah, that's
exactly
what I'm saying.
Exactly right. That's exactly my point.
Right. So.
But Leon, I'm having a lot of difficulty hearing you, brother. I don't know whether it's on my end or.
Let's get Daniel. I see Daniel just tuning in. Daniel, can you hear me okay?
I hear you quite well, to be honest. Quite excellent.
Okay.
It's like I heard Daniel real well. Hey, Daniel, how you doing?
Hey, Joseph, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. It's like I hear Daniel real well.
But you still can't hear me very well.
No, you kind of faded. What about you? What did you say, Lauren?
Daniel? I hear Leon better than I hear Joseph and Lauren.
Wow. You're racist.
Okay, so
you.
We have a disconnect somewhere.
Yeah.
But anyway... Might be my ears.
Sound like it. Because we got
right.
Two
well, I have a second opinion here. Tell them what you think, Lauren. By the hearing.
Oh.
Can you hear me very well, Lauren?
It's like I can hear you clearly, but it's a bit low. So it's either... connection on our end that's failing or the volume isn't. That's what I think.
All right. Here comes another opinion on the line. Here's Joseph Roberts. Thank you, Lauren. Hey, Robert, how you doing tonight, brother?
Yes, sir. Doing good. I'm good. How are your brother doing over there? Had a phone issue. There.
Robert.
I'm back. Hey, Daniel. How you doing, buddy?
Right.
Robert, quick question. Are you having any kind of difficulty hearing me?
Loud and clear as a bell on Sunday morning.
Wow. Hear that, Joseph?
Pretty clear.
Joseph having issues here.
Anyway, just move on, and I listen the best I can. If I can't hear, I get Lauren to interpret for me.
Okay.
Wow.
Whatever works.
Yeah, whatever works.
Whatever works.
Ladies and gentlemen, you listen to the Brothers for Real radio show. As you can tell, we're having some various technical difficulties. I don't know how to say that. One of us can't hear me, and some of us can. That's interesting. But anyway, you listen to the Brothers for Real radio show. The number to call in is 215. That is 215-383-3872. The brothers are excited about becoming a singing group again. We sing gospel, light R&B. Mostly we try to concentrate on message music. And we try to concentrate on message music because there's a great need for messages, positive messaging in our community. I understand over the weekend there were probably 10 mass shootings. Is that what you guys heard? 10
it's
mass
in the double
shootings.
Figures for sure.
Yeah.
I heard it's higher than that, but at least it was probably more like 16, I heard.
16 mass shootings. Now, we were fortunate enough not to be involved in any of those mass shootings. Thank God for that. Neither us or any people that we know are related to. We thank God for that. Because they don't seem to have any, they don't make any decisions on where they're going to show up, these mass shootings. But they're normally in a place where a lot of people that may carry guns are. They're normally in, like, party atmosphere, like these that happened over the weekend. Most of them, I understand now. I could be wrong, Robert. You may have a little more detail than I do. But the majority of them end up, like, at cookouts and street parties and stuff like that. Why people decide they're going to shoot at those type events, I don't know. That said, I try to stay as far away from them as I can.
Leon, I would say this without at the risk of stereotyping. Many of the mass shootings in our community tend to take place in social settings like parties and events where there's a big gathering of people like us.
Right.
Get outside of the community, random, and they go in much larger numbers, like in grocery stores and movie theaters and concerts and things like that. So I'm not sure why the disparity, why in our community the shooting seems to be more personal. It's due to somebody's house or somebody's party or somebody's event where there's a lot of us gathered. I don't know if that goes back to the self-hate, if it's a deeper issue involved, but I do know just from empirical data, I'm not backing this up by statistics. I'm just basing on what I read, and everything you read and see online, of course, is suspect on TV. But generally, when you see these mass shootings in grocery stores and movie theaters and things like that, they're usually not people of color doing the shooting. They're just as deadly, and they're just as abomination no matter who does it to whom. But the ones that I noticed this weekend tend to be more of a – now, there was one in Philadelphia where the person had on body armor and had an AK-47, and that person just went down the street shooting people. Most of the victims were – yeah, it was a black person.
A black guy with armor on?
And that's what I'm saying. It's hard to stereotype this thing. It's getting harder and harder. Because when you're oppressed, you start to take on the bad habits of your oppressor. That has been proven.
That is correct.
So, and of course, there was a shooting up here in D.C. last night. 9 people were shot in a drive-by, some type of shooting. I think it was a personal gathering at a party or house or something like that. But I tell you, the worst thing you can do is try to make this a race issue because it's happening in every community. because we try to pin it on black folks, then, of course, I'm going to push back. And if you start putting it on other people, people are going to say, well, look what's happening in your community. The problem is the guns. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
There's a proliferation of guns in this community, in this country. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I'll tell you this. I had an interesting conversation with Jack last night. Joseph, at your house?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He had an interesting proposition for ending the gun violence. His proposal would put heavy fines or incarceration on people who are caught carrying guns in public. It should be fine to have a gun. We're not trying to get these people to take their guns from them.
Right.
But if you get caught out in public with a gun, you go to jail for a pretty good little while.
Right.
But Leon,
think
problems that runs up against state rights. Ron DeSantis down in Florida. Yep.
Well,
Ron DeSantis down in Florida. Gregory Abbott in Texas, both of them have pushed forth legislation to make it easier for people to carry their guns in public.
That is so true.
And what Jack is saying is a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to change some laws, but you almost have to make it a constitutional amendment, because as long as you have state right issues and you have states like Florida and Texas who are doing everything they can to make it easier for people to carry guns. They're moving away. They don't care if you got a criminal record. Doesn't matter if you are below a certain age. If you want to carry a gun, they're going to make sure that is available to you. That is the problem right there. You got
let's stick a pin in that right there for a minute, and let's try to figure this out for a minute. We won't spend much time because you can't figure crazy stuff out. But why in the world, what would make a government want to make it easier when they see guns being the problem, killing people all over the country? Why would they want to make it easier to carry a gun? What is the thinking behind that?
I can tell you what it is, Leon.
It's NRA profit, all of them getting money from the NRA. It's a money thing. That's all it is.
Why is it? How does the NRA make profit off that? What is the profit of the NRA?
Well, the NRA, they advertise for the gun companies, the gun manufacturers. And so the gun manufacturers, through the NRA, they push, have lobbyists to push for these laws to make it easier to carry guns. So if it's easier to carry a gun, and easier to buy a gun, that means they get to sell more guns.
I think that's part of it. That's a big part of it. Another problem, it goes back to the Second Amendment. During the 1800s, when it really became a popular thing, when there was starting to be slave revolts, and people were scared out of their minds. They started hoarding and making these gun laws, proliferating these gun laws as out of fear, and has never subsided to this day. Having a big part of it, they figure one day if something jumps off, they're gonna be well armed.
Mm-hmm. But the only problem is, if everybody is well armed, it don't do you any good to be well armed. But back to the point about making it a law. I mean, I understand the principle of state rights, but still, the only rights that states have are the rights that are not guaranteed by the Constitution. Let's say, for example, but going back to this thing, they can make it a constitutional. They can pass an amendment to the Constitution that make it illegal to carry guns in public. They could do that. And the state rights, and that would override any state rights.
But Joseph, that would require a backbone, which seems to be lacking in Congress. That would require a backbone.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that, and that's why we are in the situation where we are right now. We have these spineless lawmakers. That's why we're in the situation we're in. But most of these things, most of these problems that we're having, could be solved if we had a functioning federal government.
Mm-hmm. That said, brothers, what do y'all think about the Supreme Court?
Here we go back to the functioning.
And why do they call it the Supreme? Is it worth being called the Supreme Court?
No.
No.
There's nothing supreme.
I'm so sick. I get sick when
you
I.
You can call them the superficial court, but there's nothing supreme about them.
I call them the obscene court. That's my definition. That's what I like to call them.
That's a good one.
Supremely racist.
Supremely disgusting. I mean, what? I mean, how do we make it in this country? How are we going to move forward in this country, man? It's off the rails, really. It's off the rails. I mean, it's probably always been.
I mean, so in the Supreme Court, really, once the Supreme Court becomes inefficient and political, well, that's the end of the last safety net for disadvantaged people. Because keep in mind the Supreme Court, Fetzer versus Ferguson, that even though it didn't do anything, but it did send a message that if you were going to segregate, you know, especially in government facilities, you had to provide equal accommodation. Then, of course, you had the Brown versus the Board of Education that made segregation illegal. And then, of course, you got the Supreme. You have to go on and on with Supreme Court decisions that have benefited oppressed people. And of course, and once the Supreme Court has no teeth, I mean, that's just about it for us.
Yeah. It's off the rails.
I mean, the Supreme Court is the one place that we thought was not supposed to be influenced by politics, but of course now we know that it's very partisan.
It's bad. It's pretty bad. Where do we go from here?
And all this stuff right here comes down to people getting off of their hands and vote. Because Supreme Court justices are appointed by the president, and they're confirmed in the Senate. And all these people are elect officials. So if people sitting on their hands and not voting, that's what we're going to get. And that's what we're going to continue to get. Until one of these days, they're going to come up with something that's really going to set us back. The way that court is right now, if somebody brought a case up there and said that we have the right to decide who can come in and out of our businesses, and somebody bring a case like that, I'm guarantee you that Supreme Court that's up there right now will rule in their favor, and we'll be right back to segregation.
I mean, just like they just ruled up here, ruled against this gay couple who sued this advertising agent or whatever it was for not building their website.
Right.
Yeah. So the Supreme Court ruled that they freedom of speech allowed them not to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
And see, and they use all of these. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Joseph. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Robert. I'm listening. I'm sorry.
I was just saying there's been some landmark cases that have really changed the direction of this country. Thinking back, stay on the states' rights for a minute, because remember we had the Voting Rights Act of 1965, where pretty much that was kind of holding the racists and they were kind of holding them at bay. Couldn't do anything, like for instance, make all these gerrymandering laws and pass all these voter suppression rules, because it was covered under the 1965 Voting Rights Act. Voting. But then in 2013, they had Shelby versus Holder, where they stripped away the preclearance part of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, which gave those states, under the Voting Rights Act, they had to be approved before they made any
right.
change into voting laws. They stripped
right.
that away in 2013, and that's when things started. That's when things went downhill. It gave these states, and right away, the next day, almost, I think it was like 30 of the states came out right, almost the same week with voter suppression laws. And what they're
yeah.
doing, they're building a veto-proof Supreme Court. They're building a veto-proof Congress through the states. That's their strategy.
Yep.
And in North Carolina, these guys are they're working on the ground in these board of elections. They're working. They're thinking all night and day on how they can get control and keep it. So now they have they know they have a supermajority in North Carolina in the state
mm-hmm,
legislature.
Yep, that's the strategy.
So now they're starting to work in the board of elections by saying that all of them shouldn't have a 50-50 split of Democrats and Republicans. And what they will do sounds fair, doesn't it? Sounds fair. But anytime you have a tie, it has to go to the state legislature to make the decision. They know these. No, everybody goes 50-50 now. If you got Democrats 50%, Republicans 50%. That's the way the vote's gonna go. So now in any major decisions, they're trying to make it this way in the North Carolina, like I say, the Board of Elections. And they have 50-50, you know, they have 50% Republicans, 50% Democrats. And then, of course, like I said, then every time you have a tie on something major, it has to go up to the North Carolina legislature to be decided, and that's what's going to happen. So you think some of that little stuff they're doing like that won't make a difference, but they already have figured out that it will.
Yep.
Well, we're experiencing the full impact of the 2016 election when Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton.
White
right.
backlash.
That's what we're seeing. It really started with President Obama.
That's right, the white backlash. You know, and that's what Dr. Martin Luther King, in one of his books, he said that was one of the things he always feared when they made some level of progress, that there would be a white backlash. And generally when the white backlash came, it was they made things worse than it was before the progress they made. They come back with a vengeance. And that's what we are seeing now. Like you said, Robert, it all started with Barack Obama. And they're doing everything in their power. To make sure nothing like that ever happens again.
But you know what, guys? I have to say this. There's for every person, there's a Thaddeus Stevens. Thaddeus Stevens, of course, was a very brave abolitionist. Matter of fact, he was the guy that pushed Abraham Lincoln to make most of his decisions. He was extremely to the left of Abraham Lincoln. And because Lincoln really was a states' rights guy. He was like, he was a preserve the Union guy. And
right.
it was Thaddeus Stevens that drove him to make abolitionist and anti-slavery part of his drive, because he felt like just saying
I'm going to preserve the union was not enough to get most people excited. So this guy Thaddeus Stevens. My point is, we need more Thaddeus Stevens in the world. We look at, and there's some out there. We have to let. Yep. We have to, as a people, and I just speak for myself. There's just not enough of us in the right amount of in the necessary amount of power to get the things that we need. So when there are people like Thaddeus Stevens, look at this guy when you get a chance. This guy was like, I mean, we've seen some in some today. I mean, people like Wright, the guy that would be, I think he was Secretary of Treasury under the Obama administration, Robert Wright. People like that are just really constantly keeping pressure on the nefarious forces out here. We have to bring these people in and get them in greater numbers, or we is going to go down the, you know, the hell in a handbasket. I'm just telling you, because what the right has done, they're making this thing more, they're trying to make it a black and white issue. That's what Ron DeSantis is doing and people of his ilk. And they know that when they do that, they have the numbers on their side. So we can't give them that. We have to embrace people who are on our side regardless of the color of their skin. So I'm just saying this. This thing is bigger than black and white. I'm just telling you. This is about power. This is about power. This is about money. And they use race as a wedge issue to support the oligarchs and the autocrats in this country. So they can have all the little races down here sniping at us while they're up there just constantly raking in the money. Just raking in the money.
Yep.
That's the problem right there.
Well, Robert, to kind of add to what you just said, you know, as soon as the, almost as soon as the Supreme Court had the, you know, affirmative action in college admissions thing, gutted, if you will, coming right behind them was a lawsuit, but, you know, challenging legacy admissions.
Right.
You know,
because
racists don't think things all the way out.
Right.
They don't know that what they're doing is affecting so many people. You know, they didn't think it out. They didn't realize, oh, shoot. What about legacy admissions?
Which is the problem, Leon.
Uh-huh.
The folks that were fighting this this admission policy, they weren't the folks that are the billionaires.
Right.
So they're like, what are you guys doing there? These guys didn't read the script.
Right.
Go ahead, Joe. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but like I said, but they weren't the millionaires and the billionaires, but they were actually like proxies, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, acting on their behalf, knowingly or unknowingly.
Right.
Hey, guys.
Yeah, man.
What about this? What about this event coming up this weekend? I don't want to change the topic yet if we're done with the. I'm gonna tell you the truth, man. It depresses me. The pickle we find ourselves in right now. I'm just gonna tell you. I'm working relentlessly trying to help the economic, build an economic foundation. Because in this capitalistic society, if you don't have capital, you can't buy your favorite congressperson. You can't buy off the NRA. You can't buy off all these special interests. You depend on the vote. And if they're making it harder and harder for you to vote and making your vote less and less, then we got to work that much harder, but we're not going to give up. That's the thing. We're not going to give up. That means we have to register 10 times more people than we've already done. We have to do that.
Right.
But the vote right now is the biggest tool in our toolbox.
That said, Robert. Hey, Robert, that said, very unfortunately, as you mentioned earlier, we have so many people who just don't believe voting matters. And it's really hard to convince them. No matter what kind of pickles they find themselves in, they don't blame it. They can't seem to wrap their hands or their thoughts around the fact that it is these people that are in elected office. I tell people all the time, look, if you don't vote, you're just turning your life over to somebody who doesn't give a flip about you. I mean, yes, turning out, they have the power to do stuff to make your life happy or miserable. If not you, if you think you have it made, think about somebody else. But that's hard for people to do these days.
Really, yeah, I think it was amazing.
People to think about somebody else.
How in the,
go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I think it was amazing how in the last election, the entire world was sitting around waiting on the black vote. And so we still have that. They're aware that we're here still, but we have to keep that in the back of their minds whenever it's time for an election. Because when that last election, everybody in the world was sitting around waiting on the black vote to come in from Michigan.
Yeah, see if black folks are gonna actually go to the polls.
Yeah. Yeah. This political system is not perfect. It is far from perfect, but it's the only thing we have. What are you gonna do? Set out and say, "Well, I'm not gonna participate." Do you know that your vote determines whether that pothole gets filled on your street? Your vote determines whether your pay handles your utilities. It determines who's going to send a police to your house or not.
Robert.
You sat there and said it. Go ahead, Joe.
I'm listening to what you're saying, and of course, and what you're saying is 100% accurate. The only problem is, and the point I'll get ready to make before you brought that point up, is, you know, a lot of times on the federal level, we can see some action that benefits us. But the problem is, a lot of times when you get down to the local government, our own party leaders are not doing anything to benefit us. That's where the problem comes in. And see, and that's what people can relate to. They can relate to how quick the police got to their house and the potholes in their street and other different issues in their neighborhood that they don't see being attended to, and they know that the people in power are people they voted for. That's where the problem comes in.
That's where the problem comes in.
Yeah.
We're gonna stick a pin in that. Take a short break. Come back and talk about coming home. Brothers are coming home Sunday. You get ready for an event on Monday. So we're going to look forward to that. In the meantime, we're going to take a short break.
All right.
People moving out, because of the color of the skin. Run, 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 but you sure can't hide. For me, and I'll set you free. Rap on, brother, rap on. Well, the only person talking about love and brother is the preacher. And it seems nobody's interested in learning but the teacher. Segregation, determination, demonstration, integration, aggravation, humiliation, obligation to my nation.
Ladies and gentlemen, listen to the Brothers for Real radio show. I'm going to tell you something right quick. I'm going to tell you, the Gatewood Brothers formed a gospel singing group while most of us were in our teens. We went from church to church, wiring congregation with our youth, Daniel being the most youthful, determination, and our unique harmony. As we grew up, began going into different directions, sustaining as a group became unrealistic, if not impossible. It turns out, 50 years later, here we are again. Five of us, Joseph, Robert, Leon, Curtis, and Daniel. We're living in various locations, doing various professions, where we're all on one accord singing again, but this time with a slight twist. We're doing some light rhythm and blues and message music, all that has been added to our repertoire. One of our missions, and I say one of our missions, is the desire to preserve good soul music. And I say another of our missions is to spread the good word, spread positive information and messaging to our community through music. Robert, I understand, is one of the brothers and helped pull this back together. He's getting ready to have to hop off here in a second. So, Robert, how you doing, man? Let's talk about the Gatewood Brothers right quick.
Leon, you did a good synopsis of the brothers. I have to give bad props to my brother Aaron, who initiated the group. This was many years ago. And like you said, we did we did a lot of singing when we were young, but life got in the way as we got older. I went off to college, Jordan went to college, and it's very hard to hold a group together when you're in college, especially when your leader has passed away. So in 2022, the stars just lined up, and we decided to get back together. And I was determined that whatever we have to do, because our lives are different now, we have more time to do it. We've gone out and made our footprint in the world. Some of us are retired, and we're able to do things that we couldn't do during the preceding 45-plus years. So I thought this was a great opportunity. You summarized very nicely. We are a gospel singing group by nature. But we decided to start singing again. I thought it would be nice to add message music to our lineup. And when I say message music, we take some of the regular R&B songs that many people are familiar with and that have a message, and we go out and sing those songs. Songs like Sweet Love by the Commodores, Ball of Confusion by the Temptations, Wake Up Everybody by Hal Melvin and the Blue Notes, Love Train by the OJs, and so forth and so on. So that makes it entertaining. It's nostalgic. But we always keep that little gospel twist as part of our purpose, because our good parents, our dear parents, Reverend Dr. W.H. Gatewood and Ms. Geneva Gaddy Gatewood, they instilled that in us, and it got us to where we are. And so we're not giving up, but we have expanded our offering. And so we will be showing up at the Hampton B. Allen Library in less than a week, on July 10th at 10:30 a.m. And if you're in the area, come on out. You will not be disappointed. We have some great tunes lined up. We're going to play some of the old favorites. We're going to throw in a few new ones. So I say just come on out on July 10th. We'll be glad to see you and get to meet your brothers.
All right, man. I think Robert just told the truth. You come out on Monday at 10:30 at the Hampton Theater Allen Library down in the little theater. I said the little theater because it is the little theater. And we're going to have a good time. We're going to talk about some things we hadn't talked about before. Get to know each other.
Let me throw one more thing. Let me throw one more thing in there. We did an original song a few years ago, A Mother Gave Me Life, and Daniel, of course, sang that song. Was a collaboration between Daniel and myself. But he's going to bring that. A lot of people have been requesting that song, and we're going to add that to the lineup. And I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, Daniel, so you can take it from here.
Take it from here, Daniel. Take it, Daniel. Take it.
We lose Daniel.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I've been debating whether it might be a good change of pace just to play it while we sing it. As a kind of like, you know, how people do sometimes, you know, just have a live piano playing with a song, kind of give it a whole different feel during the program.
Okay.
And either that or... I really feel that'll be a good way to do it. Just play it and maybe kind of talk about it, talk through it while it's doing the verses, in between verses.
Okay. Well, I'm sure whatever you put together, I'm sure it's going to be great, as your improvement over the years. And just another quick thing. One thing we've done also in this revival of the group, all of the brothers, they get a chance to shine. I mean, Joseph leads, Leon leads, Curtis leads, Daniel leads, Robert leads. Everybody gets a chance at the microphone. And we did that on purpose because all of the brothers are talented and they all have a great voice.
Correct.
They all have a purpose. So, wait, hold that. Hold that. I'm sorry.
I didn't hear.
So come on out and hit the brothers. Some of us, we're going to have some sing-along songs. We're going to have a great program. And so I'm looking forward to coming back home, coming from Washington, D.C. area, back to Waynesboro on July 10th. And so looking forward to seeing everybody there. I'm going to have to jump off the call. My have another call coming up. But I just wanted to say thank you, brothers, for a great show. And like I say, I think what the Isley brothers said, I've got work to do. So let's keep your foot on the pedal. And with the challenges seem, sometimes they seem insurmountable. But one thing, we are not quitters. We don't give up. Whether it's the somebody trying to suppress the vote, whether it's somebody trying to take away rights, we're not going to stop. And that's why our message music is much more, so important now. It's more important now than ever. Just listen to the lyrics sometimes of Ball of Confusion and feel like you're in a time warp. Some of those things are still going on right now. So we're going to sing about it. When we're not singing about it, we're going to be out on the street putting our feet on the ground and working for justice in this country. That's what it's about, really. It's about justice. And
that's right.
We're a big proponent of justice. All right, brothers. I'll see you on the next show, and thank you, everybody. So I'm going to tune out for now, but you guys have a good rest of the show.
Thank you, Robert.
Good night,
brother.
Brothers, the brothers that are left on this show, man. I'm gonna jump back to where we were for a minute about voting because it's important to me. I think somehow if we want to use our group as a mission, one of the things we could use our group as a mission for would be to increase voter participation among African Americans, and that is, after all, how this is going to have to, that's what a battleground is going to have to be. Every day, those guys are thinking of a way to maintain that power and the way they know, the way that they know they can maintain that power is they keep people from voting. Because every time they get their hands on your feet on your neck, they keep it there. They push down harder. Every time they find out a way to gerrymander or find a way to keep another district, claim another district, they do it. They put their feet on their, they put their knee on your neck and just push down harder. While we're sitting around still debating whether or not voting is worth doing, we still have people sitting around wondering whether voting is worth doing. Eventually, it will not be at all worth doing.
Right.
Unless we move quickly. Eventually, they're trying to get it to a place where it's not worth doing, where your talking is really going to come to fruition. It's not worth doing. So they're going to have all the district gerrymandered. They're going to have everything in a little bunch. They don't even worry about whether you vote or not. That's where they head. That's the direction they're headed to, where it doesn't matter whether you vote or not. They can get people like Trump in there because they know your vote doesn't matter anymore. It's been diluted out, gerrymandered out, put over there in a box somewhere where it's not going to really count. So if we want to be powerful, if we want to use our power for something, brothers, this is Leon talking. If we can find a way to encourage black people to wake them up, we got this song called Wake Up Everybody that we sing. Wake up everybody, no more sleeping in bed, no more backward thinking, time for thinking ahead. It is time for us to do that. I mean, it's past time, don't get me wrong, but there is no more time left to fool around. Trust me. There's no more time to sit around in the debate on whether or not voting is worth doing. Because that time has run out. It has run out. So if you're sitting around talking to somebody that's talking like that, punch them in the stomach and walk away.
Hey, Rob, Leon.
Yes, sir.
Man, it's amazing how that song, Wake Up Everybody, how it parallels the woke culture.
Right.
You familiar with the woke culture?
I am.
Wake up, now you're woke. So let's do something about it.
Wake up, now you're woke. And the woke, they're using wokeness just like they use the watermelon. They're attaching it to it. They're making fun of it. When we say stay woke, they're attacking that phrase to make people afraid to say, I'm woke. Stay woke.
You know, that's what they've always done. And see, I have to blame the education system for a lot of problems that we are having. The education system has done a very poor job of teaching the truth.
Yeah.
It's done a poor job at it. Teaching the truth.
You ever heard of a guy named Prince E.A.?
You know, he's
kind of like a spoken word guy. He does. He teaches while he raps or talks. He doesn't really rap. He just talks and some rhymes and stuff. But he has one you might want to check out called I Soothe the School System. And he just talks about how backward it is. It's just school system is just backward. It's not teaching. It's not doing anything. It's stuck in a rut.
It's in a rut.
And we're seeing the
results of that in politics, business, our social lives, everything. Because most of these people up in Congress and in the Senate, they've been miseducated. They're like the average person you meet on the street. And that those lies have been engraved in their brain. And the ones that appear to be the best students seem to be the ones that's creating the most problems.
Right.
Because they're the most brainwashed. And, you know, and another thing we talked about, what we vote black people in the office just because they're black and they don't have our best interests in mind.
Let me say this. You're exactly right. You have that issue. And those jokers are tricky.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is you may think they straight till they get in that room, man.
We got a whole lot of them like that in Charlotte. I don't think there was a straight one on the Charlotte head of council. I mean, I only think that from the May on down, I don't think any of them have our best interest in mind. But we just keep voting for them in the so-called black political caucus. They keep coming out there recommending them, and they don't tell us why they recommend them. They just say this is our slate of candidates, and you be making the assumption that they've done some type of research and they hadn't done anything.
Right.
Just like a friend of mine told me the black political caucus was going to be holding offices, elected officers, and he gave me the email address and everything. So I sent him an email and told him I wanted to run for president, and of course. They don't have a president, what they have a chairman, but they know what I meant.
Right.
I ain't heard nothing from them jokers. Seems like to me they would at least ask me why I want to run.
Right.
And want to know what my background is and what my credentials are. Seems like to me they'd at least had that much interest. But they didn't. They didn't care. I wasn't in the clique, and they felt like I would be somebody who's going to shake the establishment that they have. But Fishaw is full of a bunch of cliques. And the only thing those Negroes are doing or interested in is enriching themselves. And it's sad to say they're all Democrats. And see, that's the kind of stuff. Huh?
Yeah, and when you said that email and they said, Negro, please.
Right. And see, and that's the kind of thing that's stopping people from voting.
That's right.
Just like I said, these people up there in Washington, the House of Representatives, the Senate, the President, all of them, they can have the grandest ideas you ever heard of when it comes to moving us forward. But if you got these local politicians, that's the only thing they are interested in is enriching themselves, and that's who people see. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
That's
sad.
Who they see.
Sad PR.
That's who they see. Right.
Right.
And I had a lady call me from the, she called me about a fundraising. I don't know what she called, but she know she was raising money for the National Democratic Party. And I just told her, I said, if y'all want to get us interested on the national level, I said, you need to address some of these issues we have at the local level with
That's
Democrats.
Right. That's right. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, Daniel, you still there, brother?
Yeah, man, I'm here.
You still there? Well, look, guys, like I say, like everybody knows, I want to tell everybody again, we're going to be at the Hampton B. Allen, the Hampton B. Allen Library. That's the library in Wadesboro, North Carolina, the Hampton B. Allen Library at 10.
Oh, yeah.
At 10:30, and Monday, July the 10th,
Gatewood Brothers
will be in the house. When this is exciting stuff, man. I mean, I get it. I don't get as nervous as I thought I would get when we do performances. You know, because I'm kind of introvert. Most people don't believe that, but I'm introvert.
That's not the word I was thinking. I mean, you can find another word.
Never mind.
As well as the dictionary is, I'm sure we can find another word.
never mind. Anyway. So, guys, look, we'll see y'all Sunday. I'm going to tune out. We're going to go ahead and tune out. We're going to let everybody get some good thoughts, bad thoughts in their head. This funkadelic tune coming in the background. Full of wisdom. This thing is full of wisdom. I mean, King Solomon couldn't have done it better. If King Solomon was a rap artist, this is what he would have wrote. Or whatever. They couldn't have done it better, man, on this thing, man. But we'll probably be back next week. We're going to tune out with good thoughts, bad thoughts, funkadelic. Take your time, listen to it, and enjoy the week. You brothers have a good night, man. Now, hang on there. Listen to this now.
No. Oh, don't bite.
Just coming back. Don't go anywhere. Don't you double dare go anywhere. He's getting ready to preach.
Travel like a king. Listen to the inner voice. A higher wisdom is at work for you. Conquering the stumbling blocks come easier when the conqueror is in tune with the infinite. Every ending is a new beginning. Life is an endless unfoldment. Change your mind and you change your relation to time. Good thoughts bring forth good fruit. Bullshit. and fly. The kingdom of heaven is within. Free your mind, your ass will follow. Play on, children. Fell on.